the words of the preacher of David's offspring, who was in Jerusalem, likewise the king. Of vanity vanities, preacher tells one, of vanity vanities, vain, all is none. Or we could say, of vanity vanities, vain, every one. But that wouldn't exactly rhyme with one. So, I mean, it would be the same word. But that's Ecclesiastes, little children, chapter 1, verses 1 and 2 of that book of the Bible in the Ward Green version from 2004. That's our daily scripture for today. We're doing an early video today because I want to catch up, because my sleep cycle keeps getting further and further pushed back, and that means that eventually I'm going to skip a day where I won't. Eventually I'll have missed one day of sleep, and I'm doing just fine though. But that's what I used to do when I was in peak health. I keep pushing the time of my going to bed back more and more, and then I would just eventually not go to bed that day and wait till the next time, till the next cycle to go to bed. So, but this way we'll be able to get hopefully the important video done, so we don't have to worry about the video, which we otherwise would be missing if I skip a day. So we can't skip a day on the videos, so I'm going to do two videos. I did one last night, and I'll do another one now, and that will help us keep up to the up to date with the videos. So today we're doing Trojan War, paragraph 7 of chapter 12. We just said yesterday we owe many debts to fine Egyptologists. And, of course, one of those people to whom we owe many debts is Manetho himself, who, during the time of, we believe, Ptolemy, who was the king of Egypt after Alexander the Great, and that time period was a few hundred years before Christ, a couple hundred years before the Common Era, or before Christ. And Manetho compiled the history of Egypt, but because, of course, he didn't have a continuing record that had been kept faithfully for all those centuries prior to the time of Ptolemy, the record of Egypt didn't go back at that time to the Tower of Babel, for example. So he had to compile it in a jumbled mess, basically, and he had way too many listed pharaohs, and that's caused a lot of confusion. We've tried to sort that out, but chapter 12, paragraph 7 now, we're reviewing chapter 7. In paragraph 7 of chapter 12, we review the chapter 7 of this article. And in that chapter 7, we reconciled the year 1 of Pi at 788 BCE by dead reckoning and lunar alignments of the inscription of Pi found on his victory stela. The lunar alignments, okay, yeah, we did that in a new way where we interpreted his inscription in such a way as meaning the year in which we're going to go back and look at it in just a moment. We're not going to get into the details until we look at the chapter to make sure we get it right, just in a minute from now, hopefully. But I just want to say the other thing is the dead reckoning. We use the Ethiopian king's list to do the dead reckoning, which is something that was new, I think, to this particular article. We hadn't done that before. That enabled us to arrive at 788 for year 1 of Pi. And we identified Pi differently, too, from the identity used by others or the identity made by others for Pi. We identified this Pi with the one who invaded the North as preceding Alara. We identified him differently. And when you interpret facts, you always interpret them according to what you believe already. That's what people don't quite understand. They don't realize sometimes, or the people who are studying or reading the work of others don't realize all the assumptions. When we see someone else, anyone who writes about something, we assume that they have got no bias, but actually the bias is always there, and it's caused by the belief system that is needed in order to interpret the facts. In other words, you can't interpret facts without some kind of belief. You just can't do it. You know, you can't use a random belief to interpret facts. You have to have a definite belief that will influence your interpretation of the facts. And then if the facts can't be made to fit, then you will change your belief. So we developed a new belief here where Pi was a king who preceded Alara, and he ruled for 32 years, and then there was Alara for 23 years, followed by Kashta for 13 years. And then, after Kashta, came Shabaka in our chronology. So, and we had 788 minus 23 is, minus 32 is 756 for the beginning of Alara's reign, and then minus 23 for Alara brought us to 733, which was the beginning of Kashta's reign. And 733 for Kashta, he ruled for 13 years, and that gave us 720 as year one of Shabaka. I believe that's right, but we're going to check it. We're going to check. That's from the Ethiopian Kings list, right? I should just try and get a copy of that, pop it up here. Ethiopian Kings list, it's not as easy to find if I haven't looked at it recently. Yeah, it's not here recently. Let's see what we can do here. Let's go. Yeah, let's just go to our list of... Maybe I can find it here. Where would it be? Well, I don't, just search for it. Ethiopian. Search for that. Maybe I can't find it that easily. The Ethiopian Kings. Ethiopian Kings. I'm not sure what the name of the file is. Let's see. Name contains. Okay. Search anywhere. There it is. Okay. I found a source for the list. It's called lineage. Okay. So let's look for lineage of name contains lineage of search in the, oh, it's not in our research reference. Wow. You're kidding. That's so I may have renamed the file actually. Well, we'll just pop up the file anyway. We'll open it. Here it is. I need to copy this file to my references, so I'll have a copy later. Okay, so here it is. So this is where we found, and this is also where we proved that Osorkon was called Zira, or Sira on this list. S-E-R-A, right there. Sira the Second, identified as Osorkon the Second, with a very similar length of reign, shortened by the fact that Takealot, who's called Tawassia, began several years before the end of the reign of Sira the Second. So his reign of 42 years, which we have for him, is not at all different from this 38 years on the Ethiopian list. So that's how we identified Osorkon the Second too. It was very strong identification, plus the number of years given for Takelot the second year, although he had actually 25 years, but if there were a four-year overlap, you could see how that could shorten his reign as well. It's quite fascinating, isn't it? But anyway, I don't think... In other words, they could have wrongly counted the overlap twice, possibly. But it's very close to what we expect. I think Takelot II was 25 years. In fact, was he not? Let me think now. Although he was thrown, he was defeated in year 15 and cast out from Thebes, though, in his year 15... also. But the point I'm looking at, trying to get to here, is Kashta with 13 years and Pi with, and also Pi, he's called Wiyankihi, which is the name of Pi, same name as Pi, Pianki or Wiyankihi, and so that is that's Pi. The question is, which Pi is it? And the 32 years and the fact that he preceded Alara here, who's identified by the Wareda given there. We have all these things figured out as to the identities of these kings, as well as the fact that they reign for these lengths, or for the particular lengths of reign that we have here, 32 years for Pi, 23 for Alara, 13 years for Kashta. That's what I wanted to get to. So that means 720 was year one of Shabaka, which is really not that different, for example, from the year one of Shabaka that was at one time given by Daniel Kahn, a well-known Egyptian scholar who said 721 was year one instead of our 720. It's a very good agreement in many respects, but that's right, the Ethiopian king list is consistent with such dates, and Taharqa later identifies Alara as dynasty founder. So how could Alara have founded the dynasty? Well, because he himself was not the father of the pharaoh who succeeded him, but he prayed that his sister would carry the special, divine blessing when she married Kashta, that her... her favor, that she would be able to carry on the lineage of the kings. And therefore, really the dynasty began with Alara because he didn't even have a son. So if it hadn't been for his prayer with regard to his sister, that dynasty would not have continued. So that was the idea behind him being the founder. It didn't mean that Pi was not, in fact, the father of Alara, which also is just fine. It makes Pi not the founder, though, of the dynasty, even if Pi is the father of Alara, because the lineage was broken when Alara didn't have a son. So the fact that Alara's prayer was required, that means he was the founder of the dynasty. So that fit all of the facts. That was a different theory what other people had. We pray that Jehovah will continue to give us guidance for insight into the chronology of any obscure period. So we arrived at this through, of course, the consultation of many different scholars, and some of which were at yahweh.org, I believe is the name of the website, that had written some interesting information about the lineage of these Ethiopian kings that differed from what we had seen given by other scholars. And the other scholars, of course, just followed the previous assumptions of the original guesswork of some scholar who had preceded them. So there's nothing wrong with the way we did it. Just because we didn't follow their example in just accepting what was given by the first scholars, that doesn't mean that we did it wrong. In fact, the proof is in how well our chronology works. rather than in some other arbitrary, you know, judgment of whether our assessment agrees with someone else's. That's not as important as whether our assessment agrees with the facts. And we saw a remarkable agreement when we did it this way. That was the thing. Because when we looked at this, Pi's year one in chapter seven here, we got into the, well, for one thing, it, we should point out also, it raised the year one where was it before? Maybe it was 785. Maybe it was 785. I'm not sure what it was. Let's look up that number, 785, just for curiosity. No. Okay. Yes, yeah, someone else. Ancient Egyptian chronology dated Alara 785. To 765 and cashed to 765 to 753. And then they gave the successor of Kashta as Pi, 753 to 722, and then Shabaka, in that order. So, in our case, we wouldn't necessarily have a conflict at all, but we would have to understand things as being different, you know, somehow. Like, for example, maybe Pi was, maybe this King Pi that was mentioned as, I believe he, that was the son of Kashta, I believe, who was Pi, this Pi. And that Pi may have been ruling from Kush and not in Egypt. Or maybe since Kashta never went further north than, I believe, well, they found something of his at Elephantine, but I'm not sure if they found anything of Kashta's as far north as Thebes. I mean, we'd have to develop more ideas about that if we wanted to know more about it, but we didn't require to know much about this King Pi, who was the son of Kashta, in order to explain everything. But Shabaka, they had 722 to 707, which didn't differ much for his year one, which was 720 by our own assessment. So, yeah, so we had some things in common, but they were even higher for Alara than we were, with our date for Alara year one being 756 and theirs being 785. Theirs was earlier in the BCE time period, right? A lot earlier. So, but I mean, we've studied chapter 7. We're not going to review it in detail because we've already done it. You can review the video for that particular study if you wish on willofjehovah.com under the JW box file directory. So, let's look down at where we did the lunar alignment here. That was in chapter 8 we did the lunar alignment, right? Okay, yeah, I think it was chapter 8 where we did the lunar alignment part. But let's look at it because, no, that's before. Okay, that's different. Maybe it's chapter 9. Where is it then? Let's find. What did we do in chapter 9? That's 9, okay. No, it must have been, okay, it must be chapter 7, I think. Let's try and find it in chapter 7. We have enough time to do this. There's the genealogy we have for the Nubians. We have Uzumari Pi, whose daughter, unnamed, is also the sister of Alara. And that daughter is the one for whom Alara prayed, and she married Kashta, who was not the son of Uzumari Pi, we believe. And he had a son named Shabaka, and also a daughter named Amenertis. And Kashta's wife had a daughter, and for whom Alara was praying, that is, for the daughter of his sister. to get a blessing. And so the daughter of Kashta's wife, named Abar, married the son of Kashta, so they were brother and sister. But they were able to propagate and continue the kingship that way because of the prayer of Alara. So he was the founder of the dynasty, and the daughter of Abar and Terhakapi, or Sneferi as he's called here, had this son of theirs called Taharka, who had a sister, Shepanupit II, and also a brother, Shabitku. So this is our genealogy for the Nubians, and we need to find out where this lunar alignment is. I want to find out where this is. Okay. Here it is. It's in paragraph 10 of chapter 7. Pi mentions the first month of the inundation, day 9. Now, the first month of the inundation in Egypt is called Thoth. That's the first month of the very year itself, because the inundation is the first season of the year. So the first month of the inundation is, what's it called? Akhet. That's the season of inundation. So first Akhet is the first month of Akhet. First Akhet is also called Thoth, the first month of the year, and the first month of the season of inundation. Thoth, and it says, so it was basically saying Thoth, day 9. But we interpreted it differently. First of all, we started out trying to interpret it as Thoth 9. It didn't have the right significance. So we said, well, if we believe in our date for year 1 of Pi, because this, we knew that his victory stela had been mentioning the beginning of his campaign in year 19, according to Christine Tetley. So this first month of the inundation, day 9, was in year 19, as we interpreted it. And this, in our chronology, from 788, 18 years after that, would be 788 minus 18, right? Which would be 770, but we went 19 years after 788 to get to 769 in the BCE years. Okay, so that was fine. Year 19 and 19 years after 788, year 19 of Pi. But that was a waning moon if we took it as Thoth 9. But when we took instead day 9 as meaning lunar day 9, okay? In other words, the year in which Thoth 1 fell on lunar day 9. That was what I was trying to explain. Right. That's a really interesting interpretation. So, because we knew from other examples that sometimes, very frequently, when the Egyptians didn't give a day number for their Egyptian calendar month, what they were saying was the first day of that month. So when it just says the first month of the inundation, that could mean Thoth 1. And day 9 could mean lunar day 9 that fell on Thoth 1. And that's how we interpreted it, because we didn't get success the other way. And we just wanted to try it and see if it worked, to see if it fit the facts, in other words. And this interpretation was brilliant, because it worked again after this, as well as in this case. So we thought, well, it doesn't, of course, it wouldn't, nothing is possible to be proven absolutely when you don't have all the, I mean, no matter how many details you have, you always have the possibility that somebody had falsified the records, for example. So you never have certainty about anything. That's why we're so grateful for the Bible, because it's been proven reliable over so many centuries that we don't have to doubt it as much as we doubt all of these other records. But in this case, you know, we don't have a lot of certainty about the record, so it wouldn't matter if we had more information or not. We still have to come up with a theory that works. It's not so important how many facts we have. Our theory has to fit the facts. We have to adapt our theory to the facts, not the other way around. Right? But the interpretation of the facts, though. We have to, that's what our theory is. That's part of our theory. How we interpret the facts is part of our theory. It's not part of the facts. So, you know, I mean, it could easily be seen as being a confirmation bias, which, of course, we have to have. We have to have a confirmation bias at all times for our chronology, because our chronology is verified in so many different ways that we can't allow one fact to sway us. We have to find out whether we can find a different evaluation method for that fact. And in this case, we found a brilliant solution that seems to work perfectly. So if Lunar Day 9 fell on Thoth 1, that means we can identify what year it was, because that's the year in which Thoth 1 fell on Lunar Day 9. And that meant that we had the right year 1 for Pi, or else it was 25 years later or something, or 11 years different, either 11 or 25 years different. So, because the lunar calendar only aligns with the Egyptian calendar every 11 or 25 years. It doesn't, and even then, sometimes it's slightly different. It's closer in alignment every 25 years than it is after 11 years. So it's very slightly different. It's only 2 hours different, I think, after 25 years, which means after a century, the same lunar day would only be 4 times 25 or 4 times 2 hours different, or 8 hours different. So it's quite a close comparison every 25 years, but we didn't think we could change our date by 25 years anyway, right? And if you look at the dates of other chronologers, you'll see that perhaps theirs doesn't work in this way, that they don't have the year of the beginning of Pi's campaign as being a year when Thoth 1 fell on Lunar Day 9, so that would be an indicator that they could not make the same interpretation that we did. So that would be a way of, in our case, we could rule out their date because it doesn't fit our particular interpretation of that victory stele of Pi. So we did all this work, right? And it was remarkable. When we got down to his, there are three dates, in fact, in paragraph 11 of chapter 7, three dates in the victory stele of Pi. And the second date was pertaining to Pi's intention to celebrate afterwards, right? And then we applied the same theory as we did for the Thoth 1 Lunar Day 9, and that worked. So we tried this again, the third month of the first season, second day. And if the second day refers to the Lunar Day 2, being the first day of the third month in the Egyptian calendar, which we did, right? Hathor 1 is Hathor's the third month, and Hathor 1's the first day of that third month in the Egyptian calendar. We tried to find out and see whether Hathor 1 was Lunar Day 2 or not. But we had to interpret what the year was. So we took the year afterwards as meaning the next occurrence of Hathor 1 after the publication of the victory stele on Thoth 1 of the year 21 of Pi. Okay? So then we found out that Hathor 1 was May 2nd in 767 BCE, because year 21 of Pi was, you know, 2 years after year 19 when he began his campaign, so 2 years lower. And this is the victory stele in year 21, which is 767, 21 years after 788, with 767 plus 21 equals 788. Equaling 788 is year 1, right? So 767 is year 21, and 769 was the year 19 that we just talked about earlier. But Hathor 1 is May 2nd in 767, right? Okay. And that's also the day on which, okay, because the day number in the Egyptian calendar wasn't mentioned, we assumed it, it just said the third month, so we took it as Hathor 1. But the fact that it said in the inscription day 2, right? The third month of the first season, which is Hathor, it's the season of inundation again, Akut, third Akut, or Hathor. Second day, meaning second day of the lunar calendar, we assume there, in Pi's Victory Stela. And what, so we got success again, we got May 2nd. And we took it as approximately, in fact, exactly 2 years after the first mentioned date. And this is what also agreed with what Christine Tetley had believed. So we didn't invent too many things here, just the interpretation we invented. But also, it's amazing, isn't it? It really is amazing. Now, May 1st is, in fact, the first day of invisibility and conjunction. So, therefore, May 2nd is lunar day 2 in that year, 767. So it worked perfectly. That's what we found. Finally, when he said year 21, first month of the first season, right? And that was the date of his victory stela. It just said year 21, first month of the first season. Right? And apparently he didn't even say what day number. So it was assumed to be lunar day 1. But in fact, it was lunar day 1, Thoth 1, in the year 767. BCE was, in the Egyptian calendar, that day Thoth 1 was exactly lunar day 1 in the lunar calendar. So the third date also lined up. Now, we would expect that they would all line up if we had the right starting year. They should line up, right? I mean, it's no wonder that they all line up. It's just the fact that any of them lined up, and the fact that his victory stela was so consistent within and throughout that it enabled us to find all three dates in perfect alignment. Those were the things that were so astoundingly convincing about it. So it's really remarkable. That was the end of our review of Chapter 7 of Trojan War for today's study, Little Children. And I'm feeling quite remarkably well, considering I'm more and more sleep deprived, and I sleep about sometimes only 5 hours and sometimes 6 hours a night right now, and I'm pushing things with regard to pushing things back, pushing my sleep back. But it's Monday, August 26th, 2024 of the Common Era, and the time is 8:35 hours Eastern Daylight Time in North America. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. Thank you for listening and watching. And on my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now. That was Chapter 12, Paragraph 7.